Sugar Sickers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Happy summer solstice, or if you are listening in Oz or somewhere in the southern hemisphere, happy winter solstice. That's how that works. Ah, this is day four of our Glastonbury DVD giveaway. We've done this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're going to do it tonight and tomorrow. It's very simple. We have four two-disc DVDs of the acclaimed documentary, Glastonbury. That's about the world's longest-running music festival. Julian Temple is the director, and he incorporates footage from the last 30 years of this festival in England. All sorts of people appear in this, from Radiohead to Coldplay to David Bowie to Bjork to Pink Floyd to Oasis to just on and on and on. Very simple, the way you can win your copy, your two-disc DVD of Glastonbury. When we reach the end of this first segment, which will be in about 7 minutes, Kathy will play music from one of the performers at Glastonbury. All you have to do is identify the performer and the name of the tune. And immediately call 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. And if you have the correct answer, you win one. Okay? All right. Another weird day. Dick Cheney says his office is not part of the executive branch. That story just about cracks me up. What a weasel. What a skunk. Ah, I'm sorry, no offense to weasels and skunks, but oh my God, this guy, anything. This guy makes Goebbels and the Nazi high command look like flaming liberals who are only out to do good things for the world. Cheney is unbelievable. He's going to this length of declaring himself outside the United States government in order to keep secret the devious crap his little corner of the Bush crime family has been affecting hither and yon. And Henry Waxman says, no, ain't going to happen. We'll pry it out of you. We'll get to that a little bit later. Dick Cheney says, no, we're not part of the executive branch. This guy cracks me up. He is the darkest of dark humor, and we could all kick back and laugh except for the fact that he's a murderer. He is a mass killer. He belongs on trial in The Hague for crimes against humanity. Other than that, it's funny as hell. In Portland, I can't believe this happened in Portland, but it did. I guess I can believe it. It could happen anywhere. Hell, it could certainly happen here. And it could probably happen in San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Detroit, wherever. But it happened in Portland. Two girls, 14, kissed each other on a bus. And they were kicked off the bus for such awful behavior. Ah! And the driver called them sickos. No, no, that's the title of Michael Moore's new film, you jackass. These were just two 14-year-olds kissing each other. And a female passenger complained about their kiss. The driver stopped the bus and forced them off. Now, where did he force them off? I have not been to Portland. I don't know if he forced them off downtown, uptown, midtown, some terribly dangerous neighborhood for 14-year-old girls, some wonderfully secure neighborhood for 14-year-old girls. It doesn't matter. This jackass driver forced two teenage girls off a bus because they kissed. The bus company, TriMet, is that what it's called, TriMet? TriMet General Manager Fred Hansen said, well, you know, removing the girls from the bus was not consistent with our policy. I want to reiterate that we welcome all riders on our system. Don't you love weasel words like that? Don't you just love weasel words? Instead of this guy, Fred Hansen, standing up saying something like this, now I got to say a bad word here, so brace yourself. Fred Hansen, I'll stand up and say, that little rat son of a bitch did what? He kicked two girls off the bus for kids. Bring him in here. The bus driver is 64 years old. He also violated company policy that requires operators to call for assistance before removing any minors, no matter what they're doing. I wonder if he would have removed them if they both would have had knives or Bush socks T-shirts or, you know, but no, they were kissing. Oh, my God. Fred Hansen, the TriMet general manager, said, TriMet sincerely apologizes to the girls and their families for this incident. The mother of one of the girls welcomed the apology. She says, the mother says, the only thing I had a problem with is they didn't really address why the driver broke those policies. He knew it was wrong. He's been a driver for 11 years. But Mom, the driver's sense of you know, how to handle the rules was completely washed away when he witnessed two girls kissing. Oh, my God. Now, what do you want to bet? And I don't know this to be the case at all. So I'm just going to make a weird supposition here. What do you want to bet that this driver, given the right circumstances, if he was shown a video of two females kissing and, you know, maybe doing other things, would probably find it highly pleasurable? Huh? Two 14-year-old kids thrown off the bus for kissing. Okay. Is there a worse neocon, AIPAC-sponsored psychopath in this country than Norman Podoretz? Huh? Podoretz, of course, is the poobah at Commentary Magazine, one of the poobahs. The current issue of Commentary Magazine, widely regarded as the leading outlet for neoconservative writing, the current issue features a cover story by Norman titled The Case for Bombing Iran. Now, in the article, Norman Podoretz appeals to President Bush, a man who knows evil when he sees it, and who has been battered more mercilessly and with less justification than any other in living memory. Bush? Podoretz is begging Bush to carry out military strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities. And as to be expected, certain influenced U.S. diplomats are now pointing to the essay to pressure foreign diplomats to increase pressure on Iran. In the interview, Podoretz was asked to comment, or Podoretz, don't write to me and tell me I'm mispronouncing his name, because I really don't care if I am or am not. Okay, I'm going to call him Podoretz. In a new interview, Podoretz was asked to comment on the possible fallout of the military strikes he advocates. And here's his answer. Well, if we were to bomb the Iranians, as I hope and pray we will, we'll unleash a wave of anti-Americanism all over the world that will make the anti-Americanism we've experienced so far look like a lob fest. But it'll be worth it! Oh, my God. He says, if we were to bomb the Iranians, as I hope and pray we will. Who do you pray to, Norman? What kind of sick, twisted, psychopathic God do you pray to? And he says, oh, yeah, it'll unleash a wave of anti-Americanism that will make the anti-Americanism we're feeling now look like a love fest. But, he goes on to say, even global anti-Americanism, jacked up, squared, cubed, risen to the fourth or tenth power, is worth it, he argues. If it would slow Iran's nuclear program. Now, American Progress senior fellow Joseph Cirincione, whom we've had on this program, said it would not delay the Iranian program. It would certainly speed it up. Quick, let's take a break. Listen to the music. Name the artist and the song. Call 800-989-1480 and win a two-disc DVD of Glastonbury. Hurry! It's all around.
A $1 trillion on this illegal war could have paid all of our social security for 100 years or more. I got the Bush War Blues. I'm gonna
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
Yeah, until everybody's dead. I just can't get over this Norman Potteritz thug. This, if you look at his picture online, this is really a decrepit, sick-looking old man, as are so many of these neocons, these Project for New American Century types. Take a look at Wolfowitz. Take a look at Pearl. Take a look at Cheney. I mean, they are just vile, old, decrepit, decaying, rotting old men who have no respect whatsoever for life. For anybody's life. Not even their own. And here this scummy Norman Potteritz is calling for more death. Bomb Iran. Oh, I'm praying to God that it happens, he says. So, directly from the transcript, courtesy of, I believe this came from Think Progress, question, well, what kind of international fallout can we expect from such a campaign, the bombing of Iran? Here's Potteritz's full answer. Well, if we were to bomb the Iranians, see? If we were to bomb the Iranians, what if they said, well, if we were to bomb the Israelis, well, if we were to bomb the Italians, well, if we were to bomb the Brits, well, if we were to bomb the America, no. If we were to bomb the Iranians, as I hope and pray we will, we'll unleash a wave of anti-Americanism all over the world that will make the anti-Americanism we've experienced so far look like a love fest. On the other hand, that's a worst-case scenario. And worst-case scenarios don't always materialize. Oh, God. Why are these people such death worshippers and misery and anguish and mayhem? 10 million refugees on the planet now as a result of war. 2 million of them are Iraqis flooding the Middle East, destabilizing fake country after fake country. And this sick old man wants more death, bombing. What do you care, Norman? You're not going to be around very much longer. What about the people on this planet who are 30 and 40 and 50 and have years ahead of them? Why do you want to leave such a ankle-deep blood situation? What is wrong with you, you sick old bastards? Why do you love death and destruction and war and disease so much? Do you think if you order up more death that somehow you'll live longer? You sick old men. You sick, sick old men. Why don't you all get together and drink the hemlock? Just spare the rest of the planet. Let people try to work things out. No, let's bomb them. Unleash anti-Americanism around the planet? Oh, yeah, it'll happen. To a far greater degree than what we know now. But you know what? It's worth it! And these people influence policy in the United States. They have directed policy for the past 6.5 years. They have influenced it for the past 30. Incredible. Sickening. Do we have winners yet? Can I get off this? Thank you. We do have winners. Matthew, our boy Matthew in Bedford, Texas, you won.
How could I not know the man, Billy Bragg, who I have 3 of his songs on my MySpace?
Yeah?
Actually, the Bush War Blues is one of them, Little Time Bomb, and All You Fascists Bound to Lose.
Oh,
those
my God.
Pretty much the 3 songs on my MySpace.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you won, Matthew. One of our youths from Bedford, Texas. I don't know how much longer can you claim youth status. How old are you now?
Well, I'm going to be I'm 17 right now. I'm going to be 18 in August. I'm actually going to be turning 18 in Japan. because I'm doing an exchange program over there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be double damn. How long will you be in Japan?
It's going to be a 30-day program. It's basically a part of a delegate program, uh-huh. Youth delegate. So it gives me a chance to get out of the country.
Well, Matthew, that's wonderful, and it looks like we've heard the last of you on our youth night. You're going to have to just participate like a normal, crappy adult from here on out. Matthew, I'm glad you won. I got to go. Thank you, pal.
Thank you.
Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's hard to explain to a crying child why her daddy won't go back. Said the family suffer, but it hurts me more to hear a scat say, sod you, Jack. Which side are you on, boys?
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Boys, which side are you on?
It's about 26 before the hour. We have a very talented man who works at who works with Nova M. He's the one that puts together some of those incredibly bright Nova M promos. And before we announce the other three winners tonight on the Glastonbury two-disc DVD, I want you to hear this. If you listen online, you hear more of this than if you're listening on a radio station or Sirius satellite radio. And Doran, who is, as far as I'm considered, an utter genius. You'll hear his voice here. Like so many of the people who work for Nova M, very talented people. Billy Foster, Ian Huff. The production staff that Nova M has is just astonishing. And I want you to listen to Doran. And Ian, if you've got it ready, go ahead and let her rip.
Is it just us, or do the Republican presidential candidates sound like they're having a seance?
You know, Ronald Reagan said Ronald Reagan was a president of strength. Ronald Reagan used to say those are the things that Ronald Reagan taught us.
Big ideas like Ronald Reagan.
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 President Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
President Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Oh, my God. It's really him. We are the Nova M Radio Network.
Oh, my God. This guy, the hits just keep on coming. He's the one that does that. Doran is the one also. Well, he's put together all the Nova M promos, but the one that with the sheep in the background. Doran, if you're listening, you're an utter genius. Oh, my God. I just hope that you continue your association with Nova M. Whew. Matt in Bedford won one of the Glastonbury DVD sets. Also, Steve in Farmington, New Mexico. Steve, way to go. Ed in Malibu, California. On the Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu. Oh, my God. I'd love to live there. And Phil, who is from East Ridge, Tennessee. Phil, Ed, Steve, and Matt. Congratulations to all four of you, and enjoy. We're going to do this tomorrow night, too. Last night, tomorrow night, the two-disc DVD of Glastonbury. What else do we have here before we go to your phone calls? Oh, yeah, the former Nazi, who is now Pope Benedict XVI. This is just amazing. You can't make this stuff up. Pope Benedict XVI said today he was greatly concerned about the fate of Christians in Iraq. That's right. The Pope also denounced the slaying of a Catholic priest in Iraq as a, his words, barbaric killing, end quote. And he lamented. You know, you and I bitch about things. Popes lament. He lamented the overall escalating violence in the Middle East for the second time in a week. Particularly, he said, in Iraq, the homeland of so many of the Assyrian faithful, Christian families and communities are feeling increasing pressure from insecurity, aggression, and a sense of abandonment, end quote. Christians make up 3% of Iraq's 26 million people. And the major Christian groups in Syria include Chaldean Assyrians and Armenians, with small numbers of Roman Catholics. The Pope said, still lamenting, quote, many of them see no other possibility than to leave the country and to seek a new future abroad. A new future? These difficulties are a source of great concern to me, and I wish to express my solidarity with the pastors and the faithful of the Christian communities who remain there, often at the price of heroic sacrifices. This is like the people that say, I'm ready to die for Allah. I'm ready to die for the Prophet Muhammad. I really, really want to express my solidarity with the Christians who remain in Iraq and die. If you really want to do something, Your Holiness, why don't you cash in some of the trillions of dollars worth of property that the Roman Catholic Church controls and owns, and help these folks so they're not living in hovels in Jordan or Syria or wherever the hell they are winding up? Why not do that, Mr. Pope, instead of sitting back on your ermine-robed ass and talking about your solidarity with these people? And by the way, 3% of the population of Iraq is Christian. The other 97% is not. Interestingly, in your discussion here, you don't mention the other 97%. Ah, but never mind. Someone else will. Probably the Islamic fundamentalists. Ah! There's more here, but why beat it to death? You know my feelings about these religious robed freaks who wander around talking about they're ready to die. You know, that's the difference. The Muslims will say, I'm ready to die for Allah. And the Catholics will say, go become a martyr for the church. There's a not so subtle difference there, isn't there? Dick Cheney has asserted his office is not a part of the executive branch of the U.S. government. And, oh yeah, this according to ABC News. And, all sorts of websites do, but Dick Cheney says, no, no, we're not part of the executive branch. No, 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 no. And therefore not bound by a presidential order governing the protection of classified information by government agencies. What that means is Cheney feels that he can use classified information any way he wants because he's not bound by the rules applied to other parts of the executive branch of the United States government. Not Dick Cheney, another murderous old bastard who is walking on thin ice like Norman Potteretz and the rest of these people because they're getting old and sick and decrepit. Bill Leonard, head of the government's Information Security Oversight Office, ISOO, told Henry Waxman's staff that Cheney's office has refused to provide the Information Security Oversight Office with details regarding classified documents or even submit to a routine inspection as required by presidential order. In letters released today by Waxman, ISOO's chief, Bill Leonard, said he twice questioned Cheney's office on its assertion it was exempt from the rules. He received no reply. But the vice president later tried to get rid of Leonard's office altogether. Cheney does think he is a regent. He does think he is a king, a dictator, above the law, exempt from the law, and able to manipulate the law at his whim. My God, these people, the gall, the acid gall of these people. No wonder they walk around half dead with their hearts slammed full of metal parts. No wonder. Feet falling off, eyes pitching out on their cheekbones. Let's bomb Iran! I don't work in the executive branch. I can share secrets with whomever I want. In a statement emailed to the blotter at ABC News, a spokesmonster for Dick Cheney, one Megan McGinn, said, quote, "We are confident that we are conducting the office properly under the law." As director of the tiny 25-person Information Security Oversight Office, Mr. Leonard is responsible for keeping track of the nation's secrets and making sure they're properly protected. That's his job. Hello, I'm here to make sure the secrets are being properly taken care of. Get out of here! But Mr. Vice President, get out of here! For the first 2 years of the Bush administration, Cheney's office complied with the presidential order that requires officials to report on the number of documents it classifies and declassifies. Since 2003, however, Cheney's office has refused to submit the data. And when ISOO inspectors tried in 2004 to schedule a routine inspection, they were rebuffed. Rebuffed. Is that like being buffed once again? Rebuffed? They were rebuffed. That's kind of like, hello, we're here to inspect. Get out of here! Oh, okay. Other White offices, including the National Security Council, did not object to similar inspections. But Dick Cheney, the cyborg man, did and does. And Cheney is above the law, way above the law. He makes people who operate within the law miserable, whether it is society's presumed laws, laws of behavior like, you know, gay women having a child together. Oh, no, you don't. Oh, wait, unless it's my daughter. Here's Lynn and I with our new grandson. Isn't he cute? Oh, so he's got two mothers. So there's a problem with that? Not for us.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret. Machine or mannequin. Secret, secret.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Ten before the hour. Now, the reason Cheney is saying his office is not part of the executive branch, and by the way, in saying that, doesn't that remove forever his claims of executive privilege about everything? Oh, no, that's right. This is Cheney World. Up is down, down is up, and both at the same damn time. But the reason Cheney is claiming this obviously has to do with Irving Lewis Libby, his former chief aide who was recently convicted on perjury and obstruction of justice about the leak of Valerie Plame's identity. And also, according to Henry Waxman, in 2006, former Cheney aide Leandro Aragoncillo pleaded guilty to sharing classified U.S. documents with foreign nationals. What? I've never heard of him. Have you? Oh, my God. But you see, if Cheney is part of the executive branch and has to submit to these periodic inspections, as do all aspects of the executive branch that handles classified or secret material, then the truth will out that Dick Cheney is a lawbreaker. But so what? So what? He's not going to be impeached. It's off the table. Come on, Dick. Spill your guts. You're safe. Democrats are in charge of the House and the Senate now. You're safe. Oh, my God.
Executive privilege. I don't have to tell you about my energy task force because I'm claiming executive privilege that comes as one of the requirements of this office.
That was then. This is now.
We are not a part of the executive branch. You people can go pound sand into any body orifice you choose, but you get nothing from me. My God.
Oh, and by the way, okay, I'll accept the pronouncer here from, when I used to work at CNN, we had a pronouncer. You could go to a pronouncer and find out how these asinine names are pronounced. It's Podhoretz, Norman Podhoretz, Reggie writes. That's how you say it with the accent on whore, Podhoretz. Thank you, Reg. Podhoretz. Ooh. And this, as we get close to the break, Debbie in Virginia Beach just emailed this in. Mike had to write to tell you that Washington Journal on C-SPAN had this question for callers to answer the other day. Here's the question. Has God blessed America? I'm a proud atheist, but let's play the game for the heck of it, Debbie writes. Now, when do you suppose he blessed this country, Mike? Do you think it was when we committed genocide against the Native Americans and broke every treaty we ever had with them? Or perhaps it was the 400 years that we enslaved the people of Africa so they could build this country? Oh, I know. It was when we dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Or maybe when we invaded Vietnam and assaulted them with bombs, napalm, and Agent Orange. If he hadn't blessed us yet, I'm sure Iraq has just thrilled God no end. I'm really in the wrong place, Mike. I don't belong here. What other country would have that question on a political TV call-in show? God bless America? What a blanking joke. I miss that, Debbie. Has God blessed America? Has the cloud being showered his largesse on we who have been granted manifest destiny? Oh, my God. Of course he has. Just every once in a while when he gets bored, he gives people cancer and kills their children or makes wars start or, you know, that sort of thing. We have an update on Salman Rushdie that you're going to love. I got this from the Al Jazeera website, but it's not fundamental religionists all over the planet are just sick. They're just sick, and a group of Pakistani clerics led by a pro-Taliban hardliner. Okay, you heard that right. A group of Pakistani clerics led by a pro-Taliban hardliner have said it will bestow a title upon Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. Now, why? Well, that's in response to Britain's decision to grant knighthood to Salman Rushdie. And we have some other stuff about Osama coming back after the break, but yeah, there you go. You know, Britain just recently decided they're going to make, it's going to be Sir Salman Rushdie. So this group of mouth-breathing Pakistani clerics who, they want to give bin Laden the title Saifullah, which means Sword of God. And they want to give him that title because he's been serving Muslims by waging jihad against infidels. Ah, you sick bastards, all of you. Allama Tahir Ashafri, head of the Pakistan Ulema Council, said on Thursday that the group would give bin Laden the title Saifullah, which means sword of God. Mr. Ashrafi said, If Britain can give a knighthood to Rushdie, we too have the right to make awards to our leaders and heroes. Okay. All right. Go ahead. I mean, is there anything more useless than declaring an author in the year 2007 a knight? Yes, there is. Declaring a religious fundamentalist killer to be the sword of God. Oh, please. All right, I'm going to go shampoo my hair. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back, 6:30 past the hour. I feel much better now after having a quick shower and shampoo, ready to get into the real reason that we are here tonight. Just kidding. Back to this Osama bin Laden story. We have a couple of stories on Osama. The first one comes from this group of Pakistani clerics who believe in the Taliban, think it's a good idea because, you know, the Taliban teaches what all fundamental religionists teach their acolytes, and that is every other religion is sick, disgusting, vile, and of the devil, and their religion is the one that you should die for, kill for, blow things up for, murder for, be murdered for, and the world will be just such a nice, sticky place. Can you imagine what it would be like to have no religions at all? Wait a minute, John Lennon wrote something about that. Oh, forget it. Anyway, the head of the Pakistani Ulema Council, which I guess is like, I don't know, the National Council of Churches here or something, who knows, or the Southern Baptist Convention, I don't know, I don't care, don't send me a link, anything. But this guy, Allama Tahir Ashrafi, says that since the Brits have decided to knight Salman Rushdie, he that used to have a fatwa, a death sentence on his head, issued by the Ayatollah Khomeini for writing what the Muslim fundamentalists consider to be a slur against Islam. I'll tell you what's a slur against Islam is the way you people go around blowing other people up. Isn't that a slur against Islam, or is that sanctioned? Is that okay? You miserable, bloody bastards, is that okay? You're getting pissed off because Salman Rushdie gets a knighthood? And because he wrote something that you figured was a slur, and yet you people wander around like some wild-eyed Christians of 300 years ago blowing people up? Go to hell! I get a little upset. Not because they're Muslims, but because they're religionists. Anyway, Mr. Ashrafi said, if Britain could give a knighthood to Rushdie, we too have the right to make awards to our leaders and heroes, so they're going to give a Sword of God award to Osama bin Laden. Pakistan's religious affairs minister said, what? I don't know anything about this. That would be Muhammad Ul-Haq. Ul-Haq has stirred tensions by suggesting the knighthood could justify suicide attacks and undermine Pakistan's effort against terrorism. Pakistan doesn't have an effort against terrorism. Pakistan is a net exporter of terrorism. Stop it! Stop pretending! On Thursday, Mr. Ul-Haq said he would travel to Britain soon to meet with Muslim clerics there and promote Are you ready? Sit down. Sit down and promote interfaith harmony. That's what he's going to do. He's going to promote interfaith harmony. We love you. We are Muslims. We love you. Here, lean over a little bit closer. Bring your neck here. Ow, you're bleeding. Well, your country shouldn't have given a knighthood to Salman Rushdie. Oh, my God. Which is no different from the Pope. Religious parties in Pakistan. This is all from Al Jazeera. Religious parties in Pakistan have called for nationwide protests on Friday to condemn Britain for bestowing the honor on Rushdie. Those dirty bastards! He wrote the satanic verses! On Thursday, about 200 people rallied in the eastern Pakistani city of Multan. I bet that's a charming place to live. Chanting, "We are ready to die for Prophet Muhammad's honor. We are ready to die for Prophet Muhammad's honor." Somebody ought to accommodate them then. Who cares if Salman Rushdie is given a knighthood? Does any of that stuff mean anything anymore? Well, apparently to the people in the eastern Pakistan city of Multan, it means a hell of a lot. We are ready to die for Prophet Muhammad's honor. They were also shouting, "Down with Britain." Down with Britain. Pakistan, a close ally of Britain and the U.S., has condemned the knighthood for Rushdie, who has been accused of insulting Islam in his novel, The Satanic Verses. Protesters burned effigies of Rushdie and Queen Elizabeth II on the streets of Pakistani cities and demanded that Britain take back the award! Take it back! Unknight him! I'm quite sorry. There's no way we can do that. Once you have been, you know, once a knight, always a knight, but once... or something like that. Once a king, always a king, but once a knight is enough. Something, I don't know. It doesn't matter. So we have 200 people rallying in the eastern Pakistan city of Multan, chanting, "We are ready to die for Prophet Muhammad's honor." Why? Why don't you live for Prophet Muhammad's honor? Why don't you go, I don't know, figure out a way to move your clocks forward 400 years and join the rest of the human race, just momentarily. You can go back, but come on, come up here. Get out of the 1600s. Come up here and see how insane it is up here. I better be careful. I'm going to have a fatwa put on me, huh? Ooh, Kathy rolls her eyes. I am an equal opportunity religion abuser. So if any Muslims are listening and you've got your bloomers in a wad, oh, go find something to do with your time, please. Now, it's old news, of course, the way the FBI assisted the bin Laden family's escape from the U.S. 8 days after the attack on this country back on September 11, 2001. Remember that? Now, this right-wing organization run by Larry, what's his last name? Judicial Watch. He was going to run for the Larry Klayman. That's it. He was going to run as a Republican for the Senate from South Florida, and you know, I think he got 6 votes. So he said, okay, never mind. He runs Judicial Watch. That's one of the organizations that just hammered the Clintons. Just hammered them. And never proved a damn thing. Nothing. Judicial Watch was just like a little boutique, like Norman Podhoretz's organization. But through Freedom of Information requests, Judicial Watch has secured documents now that show that the FBI just threw to the gutter all normal investigative techniques. And you got to wonder why, okay? The Saudis were allowed to get on airplanes, and apparently the bin Laden family sent a commercial or a private jet to pick up scores of bin Laden family members and Saudi royals, and the FBI helped them out to get them out of the country. Remember that? When the rest of the United States was on lockdown, you could not fly. Remember that? Do you remember? I know. It was 6 years ago. Oh, my God. And television has eaten away at our brains in the ensuing 72 months. But there was a time, it was brief, when no airplanes were in the skies over the United States. Nothing, not one. It was so quiet you could hear a robin drop. Nothing. Except for busy, busy, busy commercial jets getting the Bin Laden and the Saudi families out of the United States. Judicial Watch, at their site, has this information. According to the FBI documents, incredibly, not a single Saudi national, nor any of the Bin Laden family members, spirited out of the country, possessed any information of investigative value. According to FBI,
we don't know nothing. But we're ready to die for the Prophet. We know nothing.
Moreover, the documents contain numerous errors and inconsistencies which call to question the thoroughness of the FBI's investigation of the Saudi flights. For example, on one document, the FBI claims to have interviewed 20 of 23 passengers on the Ryan International Airlines flight, commonly referred to as the Bin Laden family flight. On another document, the FBI claims to have interviewed 15 of 22 passengers on the same flight. Blah, blah, blah. And it goes on and on. And I've got some more here I want to share with you in case some psychopathic Muslim cleric is putting out a fatwa on me even as we speak.
I set it up. That's me in the corner.
The course of this conflict is not known, yet its outcome is certain. God is not neutral.
I don't care if it rains or freezes, long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car. Through my trials and tribulations, and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus, I'll go far.
Oh, yeah.
Riding down the
road. The, Larissa Alexandrovna, who, at TVNewsLies.org. Is that right? No. A raw story. I'm sorry. TVNewsLies.org is our friends, Reg and the gang. They both do such good work, that's all. But rawstory.com is Larissa Alexandrovna, and she wrote a piece over at Huffington Post about all this. FBI gives a helping hand to Osama, quoting from the documents that are up on the website at Judicial Watch. I think it's judicialwatch.com if you want to go check it out. Their president, and again, Judicial Watch is a right-wing organization that tries to tout itself as being an equal opportunity abuser. If somebody screws up and misuses political office, they're going to track them down and strip them naked and flay them and burn them. But that's not true. Usually Judicial Watch only goes after the Clintons. That was their raison d'etre. That's how they came into existence, was being one of these attack organizations funded by Richard Mellon's scaife money, I would assume. I don't know. But every other right-wing organization that went after the Clintons was funded by that psychopath. Anyway, Judicial Watch now has all this stuff up about the FBI. And you got to wonder what's motivating them. They don't care. They hate America. Probably the FBI does too, but you know damn good and well Judicial Watch does. Well, they don't hate the kind of America that they would like to see in America. They just hate the kind of America that has been in existence in America since the late 30s. You know, FDR and all that. Anyway, their president, Tom Fitton, writes, quote, 8 days after the worst terrorist attack in U.S. history, Osama bin Laden possibly charters a flight to whisk his family out of the country, and it's not worth more than a luggage search and a few brief interviews? Clearly, these documents prove the FBI conducted a slapdash investigation of these Saudi flights. We'll never know how many investigative leads were lost due to the FBI's lack of diligence, end quote. But Larissa's favorite part, and I agree, she writes, but my favorite part of this whole FBI Osama bin Laden farce is as follows, quote, incredibly, the FBI had previously redacted Osama bin Laden's name from the records in order to, quote, protect privacy interests, end quote. Oh! Larissa goes on, at least this might finally explain a nagging problem I've had with the FBI's most wanted poster of Osama bin Laden, which makes no mention of September 11, 2001, among the crimes Osama bin Laden is wanted for. You see, he's wanted in connection with the August 7th, 1998 bombings of the United States embassies in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Nairobi, Kenya. These attacks killed over 200 people. In addition, bin Laden is a suspect in other terrorist attacks throughout the world. End quote. That's why the FBI wants him. 9/11? No, of course not. As Larissa writes, who has been fired for these oversights and likely criminal negligence at best? Anyone? Apparently no one needs to be, seeing as how the U.S. media is busy chasing Paris Hilton in and out of jail. Perhaps the Senate should ask Alberto Gonzalez on his next visit to Congress if he may have asked the FBI to back off looking into who authorized these flights. The Osama bin Laden redaction in the FOIA document, and why the FBI's Osama bin Laden wanted poster does not appear to be up to date. This is insane. And people wonder why other people of reasonable intelligence doubt totally the story of what really happened in this country on September 11, 2001. 15 of the 19 hijackers who came to this country were from Saudi Arabia. Bush's business partners. Oh, my God. But we can't impeach him because the Democratic Party leadership says no, 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 no. We're not going to do that. Now sit down. Shut up, Malloy.
And in between the static and the headlines, I heard that you were gone.
To smoke them out of their caves. To get them running. So we can get them.
There was a time we thought we were invincible. That we go on and on and on and on.
And, there's an old poster out west, as I recall, that said, wanted, dead or alive.
But I guess we've lost another one. Oh, Georgia, stay. Don't go away.
We don't know whether he's in a cave with the door shut or a cave with the door open. We just don't know.
Five before the hour, and regarding all this information about bin Laden, Bob in Miami writes a stupid question. As Bush puts it, bin Laden attacks the U.S. on September the 11th, and then bin Laden gets his family out of the USA afterwards. Okay, but if he planned it and carried it out, why did he wait until after the attack to get his family out? Why wouldn't he just slowly and quietly get them out of the country before the attack? One more question. Have you ever seen a controlled demolition of a large building? Just asking, Bob in Miami. Yeah, it's like the the Scarlet Letter, and the clues were all just. I have no idea what the Scarlet Letter is about. Don't know who wrote it. Don't care. But hasn't that always been used as an example? Yeah, I know Nathaniel Hawthorne. I just mean, hasn't that always been cited as the an example of clues being left out for people to see, and they don't see it because they're so obvious? As far as 9/11 is concerned in this country, I've said it before, I have no idea what happened. I just don't believe the official story. Never! Never! 19 people with box cutters? Oh, Jesus. Oh, sure. Yeah, they did it. Uh-huh. Yes. And then after it was done, the mastermind of the whole thing gets his family out. And other Saudi royals who have been funding the Bin Ladens and, of course, funding the Bush family for years. But yeah, that's a good idea. Wait until all the carnage and damage and there's a no-fly order over the entire United States of America, and then go to the FBI and say, I need some help getting my posse out of here. Do you care? Do you mind? Who do I talk to? Bush? Okay. But we're supposed to believe this, you see. We're supposed to believe it. We're supposed to sit back on our Paris Hilton saturated asses and say to ourselves, yeah, well, that's what happened. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. The FBI did not consider a single Saudi national or any of the Bin Laden family as possibly possessing any information of investigative value after it was determined that Osama bin Laden, using 15 Saudi nationals, attacked the United States in the worst act of destruction on this continent against the United States by a foreign power since the British sacked D.C. in the War of 1812. Oh, well, let them all go home. No big deal. Nobody else in the United States can fly, but you people can. Now, I ask you, truth seeker, and I don't care what you believe, do you believe that happened? Well, it did. Next question. How did it happen? Next question. Why? But no. Come on, Mike. Don't get conspiracy minded. Come on now. Stay in the straight and narrow. Come on, Mike. We all know what happened on September 11th. Come on. Don't go joining those Alex Jones crowd and No. Good God. I need some zucchini and egg white fritters right now is what I really need. I just get very pissed off when every single institution, mainstream institution in my country, tries to convince me of an absolute lie. When my government does, my media does, my religious leaders do, not that I subscribe to the religion, but they have, you know, they've got power over millions upon tens of millions of Americans. Every cultural touchstone in this country tries to tell me and you that we are to sit back and believe the official story of what occurred on September 11th, 2001. Don't question it, because to question it would be to align oneself with the people who did it. But the fact that the people we have been told who did it were if not them, the actual perpetrators, their cohort, was allowed to leave the country on specially put together by the FBI. And who ordered that? Who was in charge of the FBI? I'm not talking about the FBI head. Who was really in charge of it on September 11, 2001? The September 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th. Huh? When every single cultural institution in the society in which I live conspires to tell me and the rest of the American people that the official story of what happened is absolutely, unequivocally, without a doubt, no question, don't even raise your hand, true. And if you don't accept it, you're a terrorist supporter. Now, how can I let that go without saying a son of a bitch? How do I do that? I can't. Son of a bitch! Okay. One last thing here, and then we'll go to the phone calls, and Kathy will call 911 for me. This is from The Hill, conservative Republicans oppose a cigarette tax to pay for children's health care. Can you believe this? Many senators, including the Republican Party leader, anticipate bipartisan support for a proposed cigarette tax hike to help pay for expanding children's health insurance coverage. But don't tell that to conservatives. A small but potentially powerful group of Republicans is vowing to fight, even if the tax is being eyed to help fund the state children's health insurance program. You know, SCHIP. Saxby Chambliss, this punk ass from Georgia, Republican, said, quote, "I'm not in favor of raising taxes, period." Now, this is the state, I live here, this is the state where the government of the state, all Republicans, struggled mightily with unpaid children's health insurance program bills this year before relief came. It was tucked into the war supplemental bill. In order to save the children of Georgia, we had to agree to kill more children in Iraq! This is what we've been reduced to in this country! So, Chambliss and fellow Republicans make clear that they share the Democrats' desire to cover low-income children, but ideological resistance to new taxes, even on the tobacco industry, clouds the picture for the new SCHIP bill, which must be finished by September and could cost up to $50 billion because of all these little uninsured tykes running around the country that need to see a doctor. Senator Richard Burr, a senator, a Republican in North Carolina, said, quote, "It's incumbent upon us to present options for how you get there, how you fix health care without raising taxes." Okay, Senator, I have an idea. Why don't you close your eyes and click your heels together three times and say, "I need money, I need money, I need money." Maybe that'll work, you idiot. Mitch McConnell, this strange-looking little pucker-mouthed freak from Kentucky, the Senate Minority Leader whose home state cigarette tax shot up tenfold in 2005, recently reflected the less-than-optimistic mood of the tax hike's opponents. He said, quote, "Most people don't like taxes. But if people said, what's your favorite tax? The tobacco levy would probably be it." You. Trent Lott says, "A tax is a tax is a tax. We don't need more taxes." So children whose families are not so poor as to be on Medicaid or welfare, but not so income flush as to be able to afford private health care, those children, to finance it, all they want is a tax on these filthy, destructive cigarettes, and Republican senators are saying no.
Little did I realize we'd get the trifecta.
There are, as Reg writes, there are only two forbidden topics in this country, Israel and 9/11. No one may openly discuss either topic. This is one reason we never hear the truth about either issue. That's why sites that expose the information are so vital. TVNewsLies.org is one of them, if you want to get some 9/11 facts. And for the record, bin Laden never took credit for the attacks. Never. This is what he said. And you take this with as many trainloads of salt as you want to, or accept it at face value. Bin Laden is quoted as saying, "I was not involved in the September 11 attacks in the United States, nor did I have knowledge of these attacks. There exists a government within the United States. The United States should try to trace the perpetrators of these attacks within itself. To the people who want to make the present century a century of conflict between Islam and Christianity, that secret government must be asked as to who carried out the attacks. The American system is totally in control of the Jews, whose first priority is Israel, not the United States," end quote. Oy. It's just, they're all mad. Every single one of them is insane. Completely, certifiably nuts. And common folk like you and I, or like you and me, we have to live in it, don't we? We just have to live in it until we decide not to anymore. All right, Guillermo in Miami has a good idea here. It's time for a dance. You call this a polka, a hora, anything you want to call it. All right, everybody, take a break here. Let's get the dance for a minute. Come on, get up. Let's go. Here we go. Come on.
Someone stole the keys car. Someone stole the keys car from the butcher shop. Who stole the keys car? Who stole the keys car? Who stole the keys car from the butcher shop? It was hanging from the rack.
Come on, get up, damn it, dance.
While I turn my back.
You can't dance, just kind of wiggle.
You can have my shinka or my nakawashi. You can have my pierogi. Bring me back my kishka.
Hey!
Who stole the kishka?
Hey!
Who stole the kishka?
Hey!
Who stole the kishka from the butcher shop? Yaka found the kishka. Yaka found the kishka. Yaka found the kishka. He hung it on the rack. He found the kishka, he found the kishka, he found the kishka, hung it on the rack.
Ha! Ha! Ooh! Ha! Okay. Woo! All right, everybody. Oh, my God. I've got to have more fiber if I'm going to do that, Gabby. All right, thanks, Guillermo. Man. you people do get up and dance here. We do. We do. We get up here in the studio and just hop around like a madman and a madwoman. Kathy gets so out of breath she can't talk. Okay. Have we got time to squeeze in a call before the break, and then we'll just do all calls when we come back? Okay, let's go. Let's talk with Alice. Alice is calling from Old Joe, Arkansas. Is that right?
Yeah.
Old Joe?
Yeah. It's just the other side of Naked Joe Knob. For real.
You better watch yourself, girl.
Listen. I have two things. First is Rahm Emanuel's office put out this little statement today about the Cheney thing.
Yeah.
And with it, he had a diagram, and it's the new diagram. And, you know, you could make a lot of money because you could write the new civics text.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that has the legislative branch, the judicial branch, the executive branch, and the dick branch.
And the dick branch.
Yeah.
You know, Alice, you're dancing real close to the line here with this phone call.
Well, okay, the Richard.
The Richard branch. Oh, okay.
Richard branch. The Richard Cheney branch.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But the other thing I wanted to say is...
Old Joe, Arkansas?
Yeah, Old Joe, Arkansas.
Oh, my God. The other thing you wanted to say was...
The other thing I wanted to say is if you have not seen the video of Pod Horus, if that's how you say his name.
I guess that's it.
The pod whore.
Pod whore.
If you haven't seen the video of him answering those questions, you really need to go watch it.
Oh, no, I watched it today. It's on YouTube.
Okay, but, yeah. You know, he's not angry at all. He's like, I don't even know how to describe it. The only thing missing in all of that is probably lace cuffs on his shirt when he flips his hand and that just oh-so. Yeah, we'll just bomb him.
Well, the thing,
you know, it was like creepy.
The thing I thought was missing, because of the lack of emotion, what he was saying, were maggots crawling out of his ears and eye sockets. Because obviously this man is either from hell or he's been dead for a long time, and it's just animatronics.
I mean, it was just the most chilling thing watching him say that with totally no emotion whatsoever.
I know.
You know,
it's,
and
it's
I kept expecting him to snort some snuff off of the back of his hand with a lace, you know, like in Louis XIV's court. Oh, yeah, just kill them all.
Kill them all.
Creepy.
That's where we live, Alice. That's where, well, no, not, I mean, you don't. You live in Old Joe.
No, I live in Old Joe. It's really beautiful here.
Old Joe, Arkansas.
Yeah, and I live back in the woods.
And it's just past what?
Naked Joe Knob.
Naked Joe Knob. We have Brasstown Bald here in Georgia, which
we also have Possum Grape here.
Yeah. Well, listen, Alice, it's always good to hear from you.
Take care.
Please call in again. Take care of yourself.
Bye.
All right. I love Alice. I love her. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. It's about 7 past the hour. Oh, I think I threw my back out with that Kishka. Who stole the Kishka? All right. I would like to change the tone of the program now and do some phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. Just this last little thing. This is Thursday. I think it was Tuesday. Was it Monday or Tuesday? During an interview with Laura Bush on CNN, that fake news network highlighted World Refugee Day and the effect that the war in Iraq has had on the number of refugees around the world. CNN reported that Iraqis who were helping the Americans or even helping their own country are now targeted. The ones that are not being blown to just bloody chunks and now must seek refuge in other nations as well as here in the United States. Laura Bush was on and she responded by saying, quote, obviously we're very concerned about the Iraqi refugees. We welcome many of those refugees, both from Iraq and Afghanistan into the United States, end quote. Okay, that's a lie. That's an absolute lie. As of May, just past, only 69 Iraqis had entered the United States this year. In total, the United States has resettled fewer than 500 Iraqi refugees since the invasion of that sad country in 2003. And meanwhile, the situation in Iraq, as we pointed out, has become the world's fastest growing refugee crisis. Syria alone is hosting 1.5 million Iraqi guests. Guests. Iraqi refugees have become increasingly desperate, some of the women resorting to prostitution. There are more than 2 million Iraqi refugees now. What the hell is Laura Bush smoking or drinking? Pregnant women, huh? Pregnant Iraqi women who have been forced from their homes by this violence are obtaining illegal abortions because they are unable to get medical care for themselves or their unborn, according to a new report by a national humanitarian group. The Iraqi Red Crescent. A record number of Iraqis, most of them women and children, are fleeing their homes to escape the bloodshed of sectarian violence. Healthcare is inadequate or impossible to access for these people, according to the Iraqi Red Crescent. Oh, and for those of you who don't believe the Iraqi Red Crescent, the report from the International Committee of the Red Cross warned of the same thing. The report, which was translated from Arabic, says, quote, pregnant women, infants, and children are unable to get required medical care, and criminal abortion is becoming the norm. It goes on to say that rape, theft, drug addiction have also become commonplace among the displaced who live in government buildings, in tents, in abandoned homes, makeshift huts on empty land. The number of internally displaced persons, refugees who leave their homes but remain in the country has quadrupled since January. It goes on and on and on. The report by the Iraqi Red Crescent, which says its personnel reach every village in Iraq, comes on the heels of a May report from the International Committee of the Red Cross, which warned of the immense suffering caused by the ongoing conflict. The Red Cross report noted, quote, shootings, bombings, abductions, murders, military operations, and other forms of violence are forcing thousands of people to flee their homes and seek safety elsewhere in Iraq or in neighboring countries. The outlook is bleak and likely to worsen. Now, let me ask you something, Truth Seeker. First of all, what does the Family Values crowd say about all this? Maybe Iraqi women who are pregnant are different from American women who are pregnant, right? Or maybe this is just collateral damage, right? But let me ask you something. Regardless of what you believe in, whether you're a religionist or an atheist or a humanist, regardless of what you believe in, if you believe in justice, if you believe in karma, which is only means balance, that's all the word. Don't be scared of the word karma. It just means balance. It's a term from physics, action, reaction. That's all it is. If you believe in that, do you honestly believe that the suffering, the maddening suffering and screaming and destruction that the United States of America, that you and me, is causing around the planet, that we are going to be exempt from the karma, the balance, the payback, the what goes around comes around? You know, do you believe that? I can't. I don't believe it. I really don't. And I'm not talking about God dropping his protective shield long enough because of the fags and the abortionists and the libertines and those people, as Falwell and the now dead or always dead Falwell and soon to be dead Robertson used to talk about, right? That's why they attacked us, because of the queers. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the laws of physics, action, reaction, balance. Do you think we're going to escape? If so, it would be one of the most amazing feats in the physical universe since what? Since, oh, I don't know, the fact that we escaped from the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Or maybe that karma just hasn't come around yet. I don't know. That's what concerns me. Not the payback. That's rather toxically egocentric. No, not the fact that we are doing this, and we don't have to. Honest to God, we don't have to be doing this. We don't have to be doing this. And yet we just continue to do it. I don't get that. I can't get my mind around that. We all know that what we're doing is vile, evil, bad, illegal, nasty, ugly, murderous. And yet we keep doing it. Oh, my God, we keep doing it. We keep doing it. We keep doing it. Women getting abortions because there's no care for them, or the fetus inside them, or the child that will develop from that fetus and get born. So, feticide. Where are the people in this country who scream murder every time a 16-year-old who is 9 weeks pregnant goes in for an abortion? Where are those people? Where are they? Where are you? Where are you? All right, we will, honest to God, do phone calls when we come back. We have a break right now, don't we? Yes, we do. All right, I'll sit down and shut up, and we'll do phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want...
bin Laden. My attitude was, once we get them running, it's just a matter of time before we bring them to justice.
Twenty-one past the hour. Excuse me. Let's go to the phone call. Steve is calling from Portland, Oregon. Steve, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Hi. No problem. The what I wanted to go into is basically peak oil and the fact that the whole shebang that we're watching unfold around us right now can be tied directly to peak oil. Now, what I offer as proof is the fact that every single major official in this administration is from big oil or from the military, and it pretty much has been made a desire, or it seems to have been planned out that we're going to take the whatever steps is necessary to make sure that we maintain control of the oil fields, because it's the last man standing now. They've got Saudi fields are nearly watered out. If you want to see the analysis of it, the analyses are all available, but nobody is talking about it, and nobody wants to raise it up to the public, because if you knew that you were not going to be able to get stuff, or say you were going to have to pay $10 a gallon for your Hummer, how many Hummers would they be selling? How many people would be buying houses out in the suburbs? What would be going on in our economy now? The whole thing is peak oil.
Well, I can remember when Mike Ruppert wrote about this 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm real aware of that as you are, and I think a lot of people are. But it's one of those things, just like the attack on this country on September 11, 2001. We'd like to know the truth. We're not going to get the truth from the reliable sources, the sources that we've come to over the years believe were reliable, even though they were not. So we're kind of stuck.
Well,
I understand what you're saying, though, and I certainly do agree.
Well, Mike Ruppert, the guy that you just mentioned, I met up with him 2 or 3 times here in Portland.
Uh-huh.
And his book, Crossing the Rubicon,
right,
spelled it out.
Yes,
and,
it does.
You know, it all goes back to Cheney's office. I think a lot of the reason why people are not being allowed into Mr. Cheney's office right now is that he's got plans for the next 911 probably scattered on his desk.
Go ahead, Steve.
That might be the reason why he doesn't want anybody else seeing anything on his desk, because the next 911, whatever they've got cooked up for the end of this summer, my guess is that it's an attack on Iran or a black flag operation that would give him the wherewithal to declare an emergency and be president for life. I think it's in the works now. I really honestly think that it's in the works now.
Well, Steve,
yeah, I probably fattened up my NSA file pretty good with that.
Yes, you did. All right, Steve, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Steve is probably right, or he's not. But how does anyone know? You see? How does anyone know? I would not be the least bit surprised if we conducted some sort of an investigation, not you and me, because you and I are blips. We are ciphers. We don't exist, really. But if people who really do exist, like, Henry Waxman or John Conyers, conducted an investigation, or better yet, an unannounced raid on Dick Cheney's office, Steve's probably right. There would probably be documents and the electronic equivalent of blueprints and all sorts of things laying around detailing what this madman, this eater of dead flesh, has next in store for the United States. How does that grab you? Bob is calling from Tennessee. Bob, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey. Yeah.
The chickens will come home to roost.
That's so, another way of saying
karma.
Karma, sure.
Sure enough. Listen, I call with some clarifications here.
Okay.
I think you're technically right, but I've heard you say several times about corporation personhood being a Supreme Court decision.
Right.
Now, your friend and mine, Tom Hartman, wrote a great book, Unequal Protection. And he made a discovery, and that is that in, I think it was 1886, Santa Clara County, California, was sued by the Southern Pacific Railroad for back taxes. And during that trial, Judge Waite, I think Waite was the name of the Supreme Court justice at that time, had made a remark about the 14th Amendment covering the railroads.
Uh-huh.
But that was not in the decision at all. It was actually a headnote that was written by the court recorder.
Right.
And that since then, there have been several justices, Supreme Court justices, I think Hugo Black, and I can't remember some of the others, it's been a while since I read the book, but who disputed that fact. And so there is no actual Supreme Court decision.
Bob, hold on just a second, Bob. Hold on just a second. We got to go to a break real quick. We'll be right back.
Black gold. Yeah, step up, folks, to another war when we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're...
Boom, boom, boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk, and you talk that talk. You knocks me out off of my feet.
It's about 26 before the hour. We're talking to Bob the Poet in Tennessee, who has no poetry tonight, but he's talking about the Supreme Court decision that said corporations were really had the same rights as people. It was not really a Supreme Court decision, right?
That's correct. That's correct, microphone Mike. This is very interesting, and I recommend Tom Hartman's book, On Equal Protection. It clears up a lot.
All right, what's the title of? The only one of Tom's books I've read is the one on walking, which I read because I during the non-summer months, that's all I do. What's the title of the book you're suggesting?
Unequal Protection.
Okay, and that explains this the Supreme Court case?
Yes, as a matter of fact. I think it was Tom that discovered this in his research.
Well, that would be in keeping with Tom's investigative qualities and properties for sure. So,
you know, this decision was used by the carpetbaggers to exploit the South after the Civil War.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. And this was 1880s, which kind of parallels our times. That was the time of the robber barons, but this was the railroads instead of the oil companies in those days.
We just can't catch a break, can we?
It doesn't seem like it. Listen, I don't want to be too picky, but I'd also like to talk about something else that you said about the Supreme Court on Tuesday.
Okay.
You talked about the Supreme Court saying that it would be okay that political people could lie. And,
political advertising is protected. It's protected free speech.
Right. This decision actually came about. I think you're technically correct that it would apply to political advertising, but it actually came about when someone sued Nike for false advertising about their sweatshops in Indonesia.
Oh, okay.
And the Supreme Court said that Nike could lie.
Then by extension, so can politicians.
Evidently. Well, right. They always have, haven't they?
All right. Well, fair enough. All right, Bob, thank you. I appreciate the information, and thanks for the recommendation for Hartman's book. Again, the only one of Hartman's 10,000 books that I've ever read is the one on walking, and that was a very thin tome, as they say, and that came to me as a result of Peter Werby, my good friend in Detroit, who does a weekly show on Sunday night in Detroit, sent me a copy of the book because Peter knows that other than the summer months, I walk. That's what I do to clear my head and my arteries. And during the summer, I swim. Jeff is calling from San Francisco. He's been holding on forever. Jeff, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike. I hope I don't bring the level of the program down. You made a remark about 2 hours ago about the percentage of the population of Iraq that's Christian.
Yeah, according to the Pope, it's about
Okay, there's a history there which you know, most of us don't know, and I only discovered it by accident a number of years ago. in 1931, when there was a change in the mandatory status of the British rule, there was a genocide in Iraq where 800,000 of the 1.2 million Christians in Iraq were killed.
By whom?
Maybe a lot by the Kurds. Of course, the person I talked to who verified this was an Assyrian Christian, probably from Mosul or something like that, you know. And recently I heard somebody, and I can't remember whether it was on Randy's program or Amy Goodman, some Iraqi Christian woman said something about things are not good for them in the Kurdish areas, you know. So, I mean, we invaded a country, and, we didn't know what this guy didn't know what he took us into.
Bush. Oh, Bush can't find his ass with both hands,
yeah.
Much
speaking
less.
Speaking of Bush, you know how, Mike, you love to call them the Bush crime family?
Yes.
And I heard that Russell Baker had a hysterical column in the early 90s about Poppy Bush being, you know, like Don Corleone.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the president of the United States is Fredo Corleone.
Yeah, well, that's very true. He certainly isn't Michael.
No. And Mike, I hope you're not going to eat a kishka now after you've worked yourself up, because I don't think you can digest it.
No, I like knishes, but I'm not real crazy about kishka. But
it's basically flour with suet and
I know. Don't go there. I know. Give me a good potato knish, and I'm happy.
I like the kasha knish, actually.
Well, that's good, too.
And, yeah. Okay, Mike.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'm glad you're back on the air, and, I've been taking a vacation from you because I have Bush's losing cause is Iraq, and mine's the San Francisco Giants, and they're not playing tonight, so.
Yeah, well, that's good. That means you get to hear the program.
Get to hear the program.
Thanks, Jeff.
Right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Right, take care. What was that call just about? I'm not sure. We were talking about knishes, kishkas, or... Stephen is calling from Miami. Stephen also has been holding on forever. Hey, Stephen, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mike?
Yes.
Okay, I want to make sure you have the right person.
I may not be the right person, but you've got me.
Well, I'm in Miami, right?
Say what?
You're talking to Stephen from Miami, right? It's me.
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to make sure, because you had another Steve before.
Oh, no, you're Steven.
Right, that's correct. I'm the one that wrote the letter to the Republicans, remember?
I do remember.
Okay, good. The reason I'm calling, it's a little bit different than normal. Well, I had two ideas you could use for your show.
Okay.
The first one I'm sure you'd like, and I think your audience would like it too.
Yeah.
You could write something whenever you get a chance. That would be a resignation by Bush, where he apologizes to the American people.
It's been done.
What?
It's been done. Somebody.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
right.
Somebody's already done that. Somebody also wrote a State of the Union address that Bush would say during the next State of the Union if he were even within the same county as Honesty, which he is not. But anyway.
Yeah,
why don't you write? You write it, Stephen.
No, I didn't know anyone else did that. But you used it already on the show.
No, I haven't. I haven't used it because it was too long. But if you want to write one and email it to me, maybe I'll use it.
No, I just thought something. This was something I figured you could do and that you'd enjoy doing it. But if you say somebody's done it already, that's fine.
Well, I hate writing. Although I started out as a writer, writing is painful to me. It makes my eyes bleed.
Right. Now, Mike, the second idea I have is something not for next year, but for this year.
Yeah.
When you feel like it, you could use this idea on Fridays.
Okay.
Something to make it a little bit light.
Yeah.
Because, you know, politics is a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You could have a day on Fridays where people can call in and either talk about politics, like usual.
Yeah.
Or they could talk about positive, true stories of encounters that they've had with politicians. Or other famous people.
I don't think so, Stephen. I mean, that's an idea.
Well, I think some people in your audience would...
My audience... Let me tell you something about my audience, Stephen. And listen, let me let you go, and I'll answer you on the air here. My audience are flesh eaters, okay? The first night... Stephen, let me tell you something. The first night that I start the program by saying... All right, Truth Seekers, tonight we're going to have positive stories about good politicians. You know what happens, Stephen? There would be a sucking sound caused by the air rushing into the vacuum, which would be caused by the people bailing out of listening to my program. But it's a good idea, Stephen. No, that's something, I don't know, that's something that may be the most dangerous liberal in America. Who's that guy, Kathy, in San Diego? Maybe that's something he could do. Huh?
Apparently he's so scary I can't remember his name.
Right.
I forced it out of my memory out of just sheer terror.
No, Stephen, listen, it's a good idea, and I'm not mocking you or making fun of you or anything of the sort, but after having been in this business for as long as I have, which is way too long, I admit that. I tell my doctor that all the time. I'm sorry, doc. I realize I should get into something that makes more sense, less stress, but this is, I'm stuck. But having had all those years of experience, Stephen, let me tell you, I barely make it without losing an audience the nights that I don't just go into an absolute foaming tirade about what these bastards are doing. As far as having a show of good news about politicians, No, I know who would do a good job with that. Lynn Samuels on Sirius Satellite Radio. She would do a good job. I love Lynn Samuels. Every other word out of her mouth on Sirius is the F word. I love her. I'll tell you what. Do this, Stephen. Call Lynn Samuels tomorrow when she's on in the afternoon. What time is she on, Kathy? Noon to 2? Something like that? Call Lynn Samuels tomorrow on Sirius Satellite Radio and tell her to do a good news thing on Fridays. She'll love you for it. I swear she will.
I just wanted to say that we used to do Bughouse Square on Friday nights, or you did, I should say. So it's been done.
Well, Bughouse Square, and you were fading terribly there, Kathy. We couldn't hear you. Bughouse Square, yeah, when we were in Chicago, that was an entirely different thing. That was a great entertaining thing, but that was then. This is now, and as Thomas Wolfe said, you just simply can't go home. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. Stay with us. Before the hour, once again, thanks to the crew who put this program together. Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix at KPHX, our flagship station. Ian also answers your calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. senior correspondent! Billy Foster, the moderator at the NovaMradio.com chat room. And Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Also, thanks to the militant mods at the MikeMolloy.com message board. All right, let's see how many folks we can squeeze in here as we are rapidly approaching the end of tonight's program. Robert is calling from San Mateo, California. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Oil shortage thing, it's hard to really believe when you get a little perspective. I mean, Mike came around and he was with the 9/11 people early on. He did a lot of great work uncovering the U.S. Air Force training exercises, but as far as the oil goes, we really don't know how much oil there is out there because these companies like to inflate their oil reserves so they can have a fatter stock reserves, and the value.
Right.
And so the thing is that if there is a real problem and potential shortage, if you see this movie called The Oil Factor, a couple of French videographers did that social documentary. You might believe it was a real problem, but why are they leaving the oil in Iraq? You know, they're just leaving it underground.
Well, and I think that's to make sure, according to Greg Pallas anyway, that's to make sure that the prices stay at the astronomical level they are, so the oil
right.
companies can continue to make a just unconscionable profit.
Exactly. And but if there is a real problem, you see, you don't want to make too many people upset. Of course, they have a real stranglehold on things. But let's say that there was a shortage like that. Well, one engine in a bus consumes as much energy as 70 cars, saying you could put 70 people in a bus with one engine. So people get panicked about a shortage of oil. 95% of all oil, remember, is burned to produce electricity or for automobile transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I personally think there's so many other alternatives, and this new car, the Tesla, has a 200-mile range. Pure electric. I think people are trying to show that we're being had.
Mm-hmm.
And this guns, oil, and drugs, and the Federal Reserve Note, the god of the ruling elites, they've got it cornered. They want a big budget for guns so they can rule the world. They want oil, everybody hooked on oil, and they take the illicit drugs that Afghanistan is known for, and they launder the money on Wall Street so that they can prop up the stock economy. Only 10% of the people own 80% of the stock. So it's a whole game about seducing people around money, getting people to do whatever it takes to maintain that. Remember, 50% of the people under stress will do terrible things. They've done this psychological study at Stanford where people would torture one another if they
mm-hmm.
were told to.
Right.
If they were exempted from responsibility, they would do that.
Mm-hmm.
So people really need to get in touch with their values. And that's what the compassionate conservatives are all about, right? Values. They're really into swallowing camels and straying gnats. This is nothing new. What they need to do is read the New Testament, the Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount, stuff that really is about spiritual value.
All right.
You know,
all right, Robert. I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate it, and the way you said it. Thank you. Thank you. Although, it just makes me want to go live in the woods someplace. You know what I'm saying? Maybe in the Pacific Northwest. Hell, in the North Georgia Mountains, there is incredible forests. But maybe just go someplace and be very quiet and see if the wee folk will come out and say, "Hello there, Mr. Malloy. What in the world have you people done?" You think? Back to your phone calls. John is calling from Trenton, Michigan. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right so far.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad to hear you.
Right.
I've been listening to you for a short period, maybe like 3 months now.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah.
And
what do you think?
I think, you know, the other night was like a spiritual awakening when you were talking about is anyone out there having this reaction? And you know, so many people responded.
Oh, about the rage fatigue.
Oh,
yeah.
My God!
Yeah.
You know, I just turned 56 years old. I have in the last 2 months had my first and second grandchildren. Okay.
Right.
Daughter's a school teacher here in Michigan. Can't get a job. She finished. She was on the dean's list.
Oh my God.
She has to leave the state to get a job.
Oh God.
Sold her house here in Michigan. Had to take like a $10,000 loss on their house. It's a nice house, Royal Oak area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, God damn, what am I doing? You know, I had a machine shop. I was self-employed for 23 years and liquidated it, you know, a few years ago because I made tooling for multiple spindle screw machines.
Right.
My customers were spark plug people, bearing people, automotive.
Forget that. Well, it's all done in China or Mexico.
It's all in China.
Right.
All the machines went to China.
That's right.
And so, you know, I'm one of them guys, I raise my kids, say, hey, you know, when your old man cuts himself, red, white, and blue comes out.
There you go.
You know, I'm not the perfect person, no one is, but, you know, I love my kids. I love my family. I was fortunate to be able to spend a lot of time with them when they were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But
point is, you know, all this shit going down. I mean, since Bush
has
gotten in office.
Well, no, you can't, John, you can't. Oh, damn. John, there are certain words you can't say on the air, and the S word is one of them. I appreciate what you had to say, and I hope you'll call in again. We're just about out of time anyway, but you just got to be a little bit careful, folks. Don't ask me why you can say the SOB word on the air, but you can't say the S word. I have no idea. But anyway, John, thank you. I get what you were saying, and we'll talk again. All right? All right. I hate that. I hate that we have to do that, but we don't have any choice. We have to end the phone call when one of those seven words pops up. Oh, well. I'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks for participating. Oh, Friday tomorrow. However you did that. Take care. All right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.